Jeff Passan, it is 1:38 a.m. Eastern Time, and where are you?
I'm in Arlington, Texas, where an interminable baseball game just ended. It took almost 4 hours. It took 14 pitchers. It took 327 pitches. And all so the Los Angeles Dodgers could score 5 runs and the San Diego Padres won. Thank you, Baseball 2020.
Physically, like, what's behind you? I'm staring at you on camera. You're wearing a tie and a suit, and you're very professional as always, but, like, what is the room you're in?
I don't know. I don't know if I'm supposed to be in here. I don't know if I'm not.
So if you could sum up what baseball's postseason is like at the moment in one word, Jeff Passan, senior baseball writer for ESPN, what word are you selecting at this early hour of the morning?
One word for the baseball postseason.
You are literally scratching your chin.
What's up, fellas? I am not getting kicked out, but a gentleman just walked in from the roof, I believe. We are on the roof level, and I think they're closing the roof right now. Did you guys just close the roof? That's cool. You know what the word that describes baseball in 2020 in the postseason is? Alive. The sport lived through COVID. It lived through this very odd season, and it is crackling with energy and excitement right now. It is finally, thankfully, alive.
Our Jeff Passan is in one of baseball's bubbles in Arlington, Texas. He shares what's fueling this year's MLB playoffs, while the rest of the sports smorgasbord, plays on. But only baseball right now is bringing us big time revenge, pettiness even. And it's making the postseason super interesting. What else is lighting up MLB? A new class of star players who will define the next decade. We hear more from ESPN's Deportes team. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, October 7th. This is ESPN Daily. So, Jeff, you had a front row seat of sorts. Two Dodgers-Padres in Game 1 of the NLDS. And the Padres, for a time, had one of those weird multi-person no-hitters going. They led 1-0 for a while. And then Los Angeles seemed to remember that they're the Dodgers. And they came back big. So, what is your big takeaway from what you saw tonight?
The Dodgers are just completely unrelenting. It doesn't matter if they have gone 17 batters without a hit. It doesn't matter if they are trailing 1-0 against a team that they're better than. Mookie Betts will double, and Max Muncy will get a hit, Justin Turner will get a hit, Cody Bellinger will get a hit, and all of a sudden that 1-0 deficit that you had, it's 4-1, it's 5-1. They'll bring in relievers and they'll strike you out. They are just top to bottom as complete a team as I've seen in a really, really long time.
And so later today, in now a matter of hours, to the mound, the Los Angeles Dodgers, and all of that background you gave is prologue to this moment, it feels like. They sent Clayton Kershaw to the hill. So describe what's on the line for Clayton Kershaw in this series.
I don't know if this series is going to be one of those defining moments for Clayton Kershaw. Look, we can see what he did in his last start against the Milwaukee Brewers in the wild card series. 8 innings, 3 hits, 1 walk, 13 punch outs, no runs. Yeah. We can look at that, and the entire Clayton Kershaw can't pitch in the postseason narrative just vanishes like Thanos snapped his fingers, right? But you go, Pablo, and you look at the later rounds. You look at the NLCS. You look at the World Series. That's where Clayton Kershaw's biggest meltdowns have been. Hasn't typically been in these early round games. So while every great Clayton Kershaw start is another step in the right direction of trying to change the narrative that exists because of his performances, he'll still take it, you know, like he's looking to go out there and to do exactly what he did against the Brewers. And as much as anything that illustrated, the guy's still a top of the class pitcher when he wants to be and is capable of being. But he also faced a Brewers lineup that is nothing like this Padres lineup.
So let's get into that Padres lineup, because during spring training, this podcast asked Jeff Passan, will this Dodgers-Padres thing feel like a real rivalry this season? And now it feels like the answer is yes. They're both quite good. They both dislike each other, it seems. How would you describe San Diego as a threat to the World Series favorites?
San Diego right now is the pesky little brother that the older brother Dodgers look at like an annoyance, like a gnat, like you need to swat them away, like you want to beat them up just to show them who the alpha dog in the situation is. I think they're also aware that this younger brother has very large feet and very large hands and is going to grow into a formidable foe at some point in the future. But this is the beginning of a rivalry that could last for the next half decade plus.
All right, Jeff. So around the rest of the NLDS, we have the Marlins defeating the Braves in game one of that series. They play again Wednesday. And I guess the big news is that after hitting a home run and getting drilled by a pitch in Monday's game, Ronald Acuña Jr. has kind of emerged as a public figure beyond his reputation entering this postseason. So we're going to talk about Acuña even more later in the show. But what are you liking so far about that dude and the Braves in this series?
I like Ronald Acuña's Twitter game, Pablo. Between him going after Trevor Bauer after the Braves beat the Reds in the wild card series, and now essentially saying they have to hit me because they don't want to pitch to me, like Ronald Acuña is the breakout star of the postseason. Not just Ronald Acuña, like hitting 450-foot opposite field home runs. No, Ronald Acuña's Twitter is the breakout star of the 2020 postseason thus far. And look, the Braves are dangerous, Pablo. Like I said at the beginning of the playoffs, the only team I think that has a real shot at putting a scare into the Dodgers is the Atlanta Braves. Now, I think the Braves, even though they have starting pitching depth issues, their bullpen has been fantastic this postseason, as well as during the regular season. And in that lineup, whether it's Freddie Freeman, who is going to win National League MVP, Ronald Acuña Jr., Travis d'Arno, who's been fantastic, Marcell Ozuna, who's had a great walk year, just up and down that lineup, it's awesome.
So let's get to the ALDS here, because game two between the Yankees and Rays just wrapped up. New York had won game one, 9-3 on Monday. And here we have this situation where two teams greatly dislike each other. They are around each other far more than they thought they'd be. And now the series is tied at 1-1. So what did you expect to see going into this game? What do you think we're going to see from here?
I expected this series to be something of a bloodbath, and that's what it's turned into. Like, they don't like each other. They're both extremely talented. Giancarlo Stanton hit a baseball as hard as I've ever seen in game two and the Yankees still didn't win. I mean, he hit two home runs. When Giancarlo Stanton hits two home runs and the Yankees lose, something went really wrong. And the really wrong in the situation is the fact that the Tampa Bay Rays, despite having a bunch of guys who most baseball fans do not know, and this continues the theme of the state of Florida, and we could play the Rays game if you want
but
to, too, Pablo.
But we won't because we're very classy, Jeff.
Right, of course, because this is a respectful podcast. despite that being the case, they are an excellent baseball team and a real threat to win the World Series. I love this series. I love that they don't like each other. I love that there is real – I mean, Pablo, there's real bad blood. I heard from a Rays player in the middle of the season after the Aroldis Chapman, you know, throwing high and tight on Mike Brasso incident saying, I cannot tell you how many guys in this clubhouse want to throw at the Yankees. And and they have, you know, they have not done so. You saw Curtis in game one, a couple high and tight after giving up some runs. So clearly they might not be following their own instincts or impulses right now. But the pure, visceral, legitimate dislike on both sides and the abundant, overwhelming talent on both sides makes this just the best division series you can ask for. Whichever team does advance out of this, whether it is the Astros or the A's, they are going to have an absolute handful.
And one of the surprising things in this game, Jeff, was that the Yankees started this 21-year-old rookie, and he gives up the big home run in the first. He leaves the game shortly thereafter. What did you make of that kid?
Look, Davey Garcia is going to be a good big league pitcher. And I, you know, it's funny. Every time something goes wrong for the Yankees, there is but one inevitability in this world, and that is that Aaron Boone's name will trend on Twitter and people will accuse him of overmanaging. That is like, it is such a like Mike and the Mad Dog throwback, the idea of overmanaging. I'm sorry, but baseball in 2020 is overmanaging. Mismanaging is a bad thing. And if you want to accuse Aaron Boone of mismanagement for putting a 21-year-old with less than half a dozen starts under his belt in the big leagues as starter in game two, that's not an unreasonable critique to have. But it's not like the Yankees have an abundance of options when it comes to starting pitching. And if there is a fatal flaw that the New York Yankees have, it is their lack of starting pitching. And that is why Davey Garcia is starting game two, not because Aaron Boone is trying to overmanage.
All right, coming up next, Jeff and I are going to do some Mike and the Mad Dog cosplay. And then we're going to talk about the A's and the Astros in that other big ALDS series.
Pablo, what are you talking about?
Dog. 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 That's all I got. Dog.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine. Especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Jeff, the A's and the Astros met up again in Game 2 of the ALDS. And the Astros, correct me if I'm wrong here, they just seem to be totally leaning in to being baseball's giant villain at this point. So Carlos Correa celebrated his pair of homers in game one. George Springer comes up big for Houston in this game, hitting two home runs.
His first pitch swing, he goes after it, a high fly ball driven deep to left field. It is gone. That one deep up into the stands. Springer does not wait around. And for the second time in the inning, the Houston Astros hit an absolute shot, and they lead it 5-2.
And now they're up 2-0 over the A's. So what do you see in the Astros so far?
I don't think it's unanimous inside that clubhouse that they want to be villains. I don't think that everybody in there is embracing the idea that the world is against us and we're going to go out and prove them wrong. You know, when you have a tapestry inside of a clubhouse, you have all these individual personalities that take things differently. And so the idea that they are uniting around their villainy, I don't think that's the case. I think what they're uniting around is the doubt that people have in them and how they still believe that they are great baseball players and they do want to go and show the world that it was not trash cans that won them a World Series. This is about them wanting to take back their baseball reputations and illustrate that despite what they did, what they admitted to doing, what they clearly and obviously did, that there is still oodles of talent in there. And we've seen that come out.
I don't know if we're gonna see Mike Fiers in this series, but I've built a small altar in the kitchen I'm standing in, Jeff. An altar to the possibility that Mr. Whistleblower of the Houston Astros, formerly, now potentially starting for the A's, is going to show up in this series and give me all the villainy, give me all the drama, give me all the soap opera that I personally lust for. But he didn't pitch against the Astros in the regular season. What do you see on that front in terms of the possibility that we'll get maximum drama here?
The A's are down 2-0 in a 5-game series. And so they are going to be all hands on deck. And if they see a matchup in which Mike Fiers has the advantage, Bob Melvin is not going to hesitate to use him. Because if the A's want to win this series, one would think at some point Mike Fiers is going to have to pitch. They just don't have enough arms to withstand the brutality of 5 games in 5 days. I'm hopeful, too, Pablo, that we see Mike Fiers against the Houston Astros, but it also will depress me because I would love to see it with fans in the stands. It's just like it's one of those things where if it were in Houston, the boos would be, I don't even know what the right word is, deafening.
Cacophonous.
That is exactly the word I was looking for. And you know what? I wish that we could stop tape right now and rewind it and I could use it instead of you.
But pass it. Like, I want that alternate world too. We're not going to get it, but they are going to be in Los Angeles. Is there going to be, like, I don't know, a crowd outside that stadium that, like, boos the Astros? What's the scene, I guess, whether it's inside or outside that building? What's the scene if Mike Fiers does show up?
There is no scene. It's going to be a guy standing on the mound and throwing pitches. The Astros are not going to jeopardize anything by charging at the mound or causing a brawl. You know, one thing that Chris Young, MLB's new discipline czar, has shown this year, we can look at the original suspension before the reduction on appeal by Joe Kelly. They tend to lay the hammer down at MLB this year. And if the Astros do anything, if the Astros run afoul of any rules, you think MLB's going to sit there idly and let that happen after how embarrassed Rob Manfred was by the public perception that he let the Astros off the hook? They have to be awfully careful in this hypothetical Pablo Torre fantasy world where Mike Fiers pitches against the Houston Astros of doing anything that could even be interpreted as wrong.
I need to populate my fantasy world with some better stuff, by the way. I'm realizing that when you say that, I do want it so bad that it is a little depressing. But let's...
You know what you should populate your real world with?
What?
Answering emails.
Don't... You're going to bring up my alleged too many unread emails here?
For the next time I'm on this podcast, between now and then, I would like people to guess how many unread emails Pablo has. The person who is closest,
Price is Right,
is you know what, Pablo? Here's the thing. I don't think anybody is going to come close to going over.
Jeff, I want to ask you one more question. What do you think Yankees Astros might be like? Let's play hypothetical word association with that for a second. What superlatives would Jeff Passan use to describe that possible series?
The best. When you put the Astros and Yankees together, not only is the dislike from player to player, from team to team visceral, those fan bases hate each other more than any I have seen in baseball since the Yankees and Red Sox actually mattered. And I feel like if the Yankees are playing the Astros, there is no greater recipe for the eyes of the sporting world to be trained on baseball.
Jeff Passan, thank you as always for joining me on my podcast Fantasy World.
It's great to be a part of it, Pablo. Thank you.
Coming up, Mauricio Pedrosa tells us about the rising prominence of Latino players in baseball and what it means for the future of the game.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
All right, Mauricio Pedrosa is here with me now. Mauricio, what's up, man?
Hey, Pablo. Big fan.
Oh, too kind, too kind. I am
long time, first time.
I'm going to put you to work here, Mauricio, okay. Because baseball season, it got shortened, yes, but it's also a particularly notable season for another reason, as we are in the first season of a new decade, and you are in this brain trust of baseball experts that ESPN.com has assembled to set about trying to answer one particular question. Which Latino star will shine brightest in this new decade? So, why did you find this to be crucial to understanding both where baseball is right now and also where baseball's going?
Well, I think we asked ourselves the question, where is baseball going now? And it all has to do with stars. We're used to have stars in every single sport that is very easy to recognize. And it's clear that Mike Trout is the best player in baseball, but I don't know if we can call him a star. Mm. I don't know if we run into him on the street, how many people are going to be able to recognize him. And that's not good for baseball. So we asked ourselves this question. Is this going to be a trend, or is this about to change? And us being being Latinos, we thought, listen, we have several players now that are doing amazing things, and they might become not only the next Latino star, but the next baseball star. But we wanted to find out, okay, who's that guy, the next Latino star in baseball?
So who are the contenders we're talking about here in terms of these players? How did you guys go about figuring out who is the Latino face of the decade?
Okay, Pablo, so it is baseball, so we had to go to Sabermetrics in a way. I mean, obviously we had to. So we reached out to our friends at 538, and they came up with this great system that included WAR to analyze performance, wins above replacement. Mm. That was the first part of the evaluation, which was very important. Number two, expert opinion. We reached out to 30 of our experts at ESPN, ESPN Deportes. Every single one of them ranked their top five candidates. And then we went online, search interest based on Google Trends and social media. Of course, it's the 21st century. We had to go through social media, total followers, interactions per post, all those metrics. And in the end, four names we had as finalists: Francisco Lindor, Juan Soto, Ronald Acuña Jr., and Fernando Tatis Jr. And the winner is Fernando Tatis Jr. That was the number one name.
We've profiled Tatis previously on this show with Jeff Passan. And listeners, you can go back into the archive, check that out. But Mauricio, what do you see in Tatis that makes him so unique and perfect for this particular title?
That it doesn't matter his age, he's clutch and he's a leader. That's what it's impressive about him. It doesn't matter that he is 20, 21 years old, and his team, the Padres, go as far as he goes. For a player his age to be able to do that is impressive. He has a great arm. He's great at playing shortstop. He's a fantastic hitter. No question, he's an MVP candidate this year. But it's also the flair. It's the hair. It's the way he handles himself. It's the bat flips. Everything that attracts not only baseball experts, but fans. And I'll tell you a story. I live in LA, and I told my wife about Fernando Tatis. And I'm no fan of the San Diego Padres. It's not that I don't like them. I'm just not a fan. But I told her, you know what? I wanna take my car and drive all the way down to San Diego because I want to see this guy. And he was special. You can't take your eyes away from him whenever he's at the plate or whenever he's playing shortstop. That's so much fun to see in person.
Part of the reason he is so electric, as you say, is that he is really flouting. He's going against these so-called unwritten rules of baseball. Talk us through some of these incidents and how they played out for Tatis.
Well, two come to mind immediately. August 17th, playing the Rangers. I'm sure you remember this. Top of the eighth, the Padres had a comfortable lead, and he was directed by his team to take the pitch, right? Well, what does he do?
This is in the air to right field. Back it goes. Nando has done it again. Fernando Tatis Jr., a grand slam.
He hits it, he swings it, and it's his second homer of that day. That obviously sparked some tension between the Padres and the Rangers, and a lot of people didn't like that. Tatis said that he learned the lesson. He said, okay, running up the score is not a great thing to do. I'll learn from this. Okay, I'll buy that. I believe he said that. But internally, Pablo, I'm pretty sure he said, listen, if I have to swing at another ball, I might do it again. And then playoffs this year. Wild card round, second game, Padres in an elimination game. Padres leading by one run. He hits a two-run homer.
Tatis, he's done it again. Another home run, and the Padres add to their advantage. And a bat flip amidst the flashing lights.
He flipped the bat in a way that made us all think of J-Bat. That's just who he is. I don't think he's trying to make some other people angry or mad at him. He just plays that way. I think fans, players, managers can truly appreciate that.
Is there a word in Spanish? Is there a phrase in Spanish, Mauricio, that you use to describe a bat flip of this magnitude?
no, there's not. We actually say bat. Oh, mira ese bat flip. We should, though. I'll think about that. I'll get together with Enrique Rojas, Marley Rivera, Ernesto Jerez, and we'll figure something out for you.
But part of the fun, Mauricio, is that it's not just Tatis, right? Like, this is an approach to the game that is larger and bigger than even him.
Yeah, I mean, there are some other players that are just exactly like him in terms of how much fun they have playing baseball. And the other name is Ronald Acuña Jr.
That's hit a long way the other way by Acuña. That ball is up. That ball is gone on a line. Big time bat flip for Acuña, who carried it with him down the first baseline.
It's no secret that these players grew up together. I remember Ronald Acuña saying, listen, I do everything better than Juan Soto, except hitting hard. And Ronald Acuña hits a lot of homers. So they see a lot of fellowship among the players. And I think that's what's impressive. Yes, they are rivals on the field, but they feel like if they come together, more and more Latinos. Listen, of the total of MLB players right now, 28% are Latinos. 20 years ago, it was 15%. So it's a community. Remember when MLB launched this campaign, Let the Kids Play? I believe it was for last year's playoff. Well, these kids are having a lot of fun playing. And yes, it might make some people uncomfortable, but so what? They are attracting, Pablo, new fans. And that is exactly what baseball needs right now.
You mentioned Acuña, and even today, Tuesday, in the divisional round, I mean, we're seeing, as this spotlight gets brighter, he is not shying away. And again, apparent violations of baseball tradition have been alleged on this very day, Mauricio. So describe what Acuña did today, and also, like, you know, some of the pitfalls that these guys may have to navigate in response to how they're dealing with the spotlight.
All right, first thing we have to know, there's bad blood between the Marlins and the Braves. And I would say, between the Marlins and Ronald Acuña Jr., especially between Ronnie and the Marlins. What does he do?
Acuña squares one up and sends one a deep right center field. Back and well gone. Another leadoff home run for Ronald Acuña Jr.
Youngest player to hit a home run batting first, and that set up the tone for the rest of the game. What happens next time he's at the plate? He gets drilled with a 97-mile-per-hour pitch.
Whoa, got that.
And here we go.
Yeah. Well, Ronald Acuña Jr. has been through this before with the Marlins.
You know what I love the most about this, Pablo? I don't know if you saw his post on Instagram. After the game, the Braves won the game. They came from behind and won the game. He goes on Instagram and quotes Conor McGregor. I'd like to apologize to absolutely nobody. And I thought, yes, gracias, gracias, Ronnie. This is exactly what we need. And not only that, the first comment you read in that post, you know from who? It's from Fernando Tatis. Fernando Tatis is saying, yes, brother. These guys are having fun. And fans, new fans, are going to really appreciate what they're doing on the field and off the field as well. I believe this will be the year either for Fernando Tatis or Ronald Acuña to have all the eyeballs on them. And a lot of people, I think, will come to the conclusion of, okay, this is the new baseball. I hope everybody likes it. It's not for everybody, but this is the way the game is going to be played in the future. And I think these playoffs are going to show us how important it is to have these kids having fun while they do it.
Mauricio Pedrosa, gracias por hablar conmigo on ESPN Daily.
Gracias, mi amigo.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.